they get back into the baseball picture,
which I think is a great thing for us, and have an opportunity to, you know, keep in contact with the old baseball fans. And of course, the young people that are young boys and girls, they're very active in receiving your cards. So we of course in baseball have to, in our own little way, you know, help the young fans get established.
That's a great attitude. Too many of the fellas today don't share that. I have two sons, one's 20 and one's 8. The 20-year-old has now stopped doing it, but years ago, and the 8-year-olds are starting it, he would write the present-day players, and he would have a return envelope and everything. And I don't think he'd get a response from, well, maybe 20% of them. And the little one's finding the same thing. In fact, he may not be getting a response from 10% of them. It's very disappointing to the kids. I know when I was a kid, I wrote my favorite players, and I almost without fail, they wrote me back, you know, sent me a picture or an autograph or whatever I requested.
Yeah. Normally, unless it's a special case or something, I don't usually go into detail. Every once in a while, a fan asks for, you know, most exciting moments or what they thought, but oftentimes I don't answer those, but I'll always autograph their photos or baseballs. You get baseballs you send in.
That's great. That's the way it ought to be. I spoke with Woody Fryman a few days ago, and he said he had received a letter from, I don't remember who he said, but it was the Alumni Association or the union or whatever, requesting that he stop signing autographs unless people paid him for it. Which seems to be pretty nasty, I guess is the best word for it.
Well, I don't know, you know, when they first started coming out with that idea, they had a questionnaire, and you fill that out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the charge or not. Of course, I didn't particularly care to charge because I think it's going to hurt the fans, the future fans, to charge them for somebody's autograph. But everybody has their own opinion, so I go along with that.
Well, and there's also the situation of some of the fellows from your era and a little before are hurting, and that what they can charge is helpful for them to get by.
They what?
They're financially hurting. They're not doing too well, especially the fellows just before you who don't qualify for the pension. I can see justification in charging for an autograph there. That might be the difference between making it and not making it.
Well, I agree with you there, but at the same time, I think it's up to baseball, especially for the people that, you know, that have very few major league experience. And in my opinion, even the minor league guys that have played 15 years and never got an opportunity to play in a major league, and for some reason are destitute now, I think baseball, with all their money available, should find some kind of way to help these kids out.
Oh boy, yes indeed. I agree with you. Do you remember Joe Brovia?
Yeah, I remember Joe Brovia.
Lives out in California. He had the proverbial cup of coffee in the major leagues. I think he played, was up with Cincinnati for like a month as a pinch hitter back in the 50s. But he played, I guess, roughly 20 years in the minor leagues.
Right.
And he's not doing real well. He's had health problems and financial problems. And he says that he goes to the baseball different associations, and he says it's like begging. He hates to do it, but that's the only way he can get by. And they do give him a little bit, but he says he thinks, like you, that as a career minor leaguer, he has contributed something and ought to have some sort of way of benefiting in his retirement.
Yeah, you know, at one time they had I was in the minor leagues then after I got through with my major league career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was either 56, 7, or 8 anyway. And that was AAA. The AAA International League wanted to start a union for minor league baseball players. Anybody that's been in the minor league for 10 years, they thought deserved some kind of a pension.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the managers or the general managers and the owners of AAA ball, they laughed at us. And I can remember Thomas Orta was one of the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember him laughing at us because they said, "Well, you guys go ahead and go on strike." He said, "We'll get the AAA players up here quick." Which is true. You know, they can do that. They could do that years ago.
Sure.
And they can do that again this, you know, now with the minor league. Of course, the major league union is so strong now they can't do much with those people up there right now.
Well, talking to Jim Pagliaroni, who is very active in the plight of former players, he said that they've really helped the major league veterans by the pension money that's been frozen to where they can't increase the benefits for the recent retirees. They went back and added it to the fellows back from the 40s and early 50s, and has benefited them a great deal and their widows. I don't see why some of this couldn't have been directed toward minor leaguers as well.
Well, I agree. I know they help. You know, they help guys in my era. I've had two raises, and you know, they've helped us.
Yeah, Beth.
I feel there's got to be some way they can help us. The minor leaguer that's played at least 10, well, at least, I would say 5 years, but if a guy's played 10 years, he certainly deserves, you know, some kind of a pension money because of the years he put in baseball.
Yes, indeed. It would be great.
I don't have the answer.
No, I don't know if there is an answer yet, but I think one will be found in time. It's just whether it's going to help anybody that needs it now, is the question. Do you collect a pension now, that even though you're still active as a manager?
Oh, yeah. I've collected my pension since, I guess I was 52 years old.
Oh, boy. So you're not 52 anymore. You're what, almost 70, aren't you?
Let's see, 52 years old, that's almost 18 years ago. I'm going to be 70 this November.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been collecting it 17 years. At that time, I started out with about $900 a month pension.
What is it now, if I can be nosy?
It's about $2,000.
Gee whiz, that's great.
You know, which is, you know, with the Social Security, if I wanted to take it, it would be unacceptable.
Yeah, it's something you can live on.
You could get by. I would think you can get by on $3,000 a month. My living standards have never been as high as some people.
That's, I guess...
Lots or boats or two houses or stuff. I enjoy jogging and I enjoy my baseball and take an occasional trip to Mexico and see my family. But like to play golf and do occasional fishing. But outside of that, life is very simple. Just keep breathing.
That's the secret, I think, to it. You mentioned after you left the majors, you were in the minors. You were in the minors, what, for 4 years after you left the majors?
Yeah, well, actually, I was 54 in the middle of when it was about shutdown time. I was traded to Cincinnati. And after, they had a good ball club over there. That Johnny Temple at short, McMillan at shortstop, and then they had Rocky Bridges as a spare infielder. And when
mm-hmm.
I came over there, there just wasn't any room after a while. So, and I'd had some back trouble, which slowed me down. I was still comparatively young, but my back trouble and it really slowed me down. So anyway, I had a chance to go get my free agency from Cincinnati, but the late Bobby Maduro and Gabe Paul talked me into going to Havana, Cuba to finish the season, sign a 2-year contract, and they would get me a job in managing in Winterball, which is what I really wanted to do. I wanted to get started on my managing career. And it worked out okay because I played a year and a half in Havana, managed a year in Mexico, and I enjoyed it and was successful. So after I got through with my minor league career, which is 58, I went into managing on a full-time basis.
You have been a manager, except for the short stay with Cleveland in the late 60s. You've been a manager ever since.
In 1959, I went to Selma, Alabama in the Cleveland organization. And I've managed ever since, with the exception of 4 years when I went to the major leagues under Alvin Dark at Cleveland, where I was a coach.
It was a horrible team.
But outside of that, I've managed every year, which is probably 29 years then.
But you...
19, 20 years.
A few years ago, you were... mentioned anyhow frequently as a potential major league manager. Other than your short stay at Cleveland, do you have any aspirations to manager in the majors?
Oh, not right now, no.
Earlier,
no,
did you?
Actually, I had that short time in 1971 when we had a lot of problems in the Cleveland. Alvin Dark was the manager and also the active general manager. And anyway, the year was a disaster, and so they let him go, I would say, about July 30th, and I finished the season. Probably had the worst record managing in baseball, because that was kind of a tough. All I did when I took over is said, let's go out and have some fun, fellas. I mean, on the baseball field.
Right.
Because it was not a situation where you could completely turn that around. It just, we had a bunch of injuries and other things, they were all upset.
Well, you know, this 20 years ago, and they still haven't turned the Cleveland situation around.
Well, they've had some good players come through there, too.
Yes, they have.
I don't know what it's going to take over there, but they're going to win one of these years. They won back in 46, 47, 48. 48 is when they won it.
Yeah. Well, they had
They won in 54, they had that big year.
From the, mid-40s to the mid-50s, they were... probably as good a team, other than the Yankees, as it was in baseball.
They had a great pitching staff.
Yes, they did.
And that's what it takes, I think, in baseball. The pitching is such an important part of it.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's too many good hitters finishing in the second division without a pitching staff with them. Well, right now, as of last season, you have 2,106 wins as a minor league manager. You're climbing... all the time. You're somewhere, and I don't know how it stands right now, but I think you're about sixth or seventh. Does that sound right?
That's about right, I think.
Yeah.
To me, that's not important. In a sense, it's not important. You know, the awards are nice to get, and records are there to be broken. I have no chance to break, let's see, what's this guy's name? The other Pollock.
The guy that was with the Dodgers for so long.
I
can't think of his name either right now.
Well, anyway, he's got almost 2,500.
Yeah.
So that's going to take me another 5 years.
Anyhow.
And I don't plan on managing that long, no. This conceivably could be my last season. I'll be 70. Although I'd like to manage as long as I feel able to, and right now I'm still in pretty good condition.
Well, that's great. Stan Wasiak, is that his name?
Probably. My weight is similar to my playing weight when I played.
Well, that's great.
And I jog 30 minutes a day, normally play some golf, and do a little walking.
Well, you've got to, because you can sure run down quickly if you don't.
But you never, when you get this dangerous age, you never know.
Yeah.
I'm losing some friends younger than me, so.
That's, I'm 20 years younger than you, and I'm losing some friends, so yeah, it's very scary.
Yes, it is.
Stan
Wasiak.
Yeah, Wasiak, okay.
Stan Wasiak's the guy, yeah. He's a good friend.
Yeah, he had a phenomenal record. Over the years, you've evidently, obviously managed a whole lot of young ball players. Who have you managed that have gone on to be well-known?
Oh, there's been a lot of them. Right now, there's two active managers. I had Sparky Anderson in 61. Chuck Tanner was also in that ball club in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had Lou Piniella for 3 years in the minor league. So, you know, these are just current guys.
Yeah.
I've had so many of them.
Who is
Bobby Bonilla in the minor league.
Oh, really?
Pardon?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Bobby Bonilla. I was in Pittsburgh in those times. Bobby was a special kind of kid, you know. He had the good natural talents. I had him in Alexandria, Virginia. had it and had him a couple years in instructional league. But he had that natural ability, but he always had a smile on his face and just loved to play.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked hard at it. And I never thought he was going to be the highest priced player in baseball, but he made it. And he's a good player.
Yes, he is. And more power to him. If they want to give him the money, he should take it. Okay, let's go back to the start of your career. You started out with Muskegon in the Michigan State League, and you obviously didn't belong there.
When I was 18 years old, I belonged there, really.
Not according to the pitchers in the league, I don't think.
Well, I had good stats there, yes, and I was very cocky. I'll tell you one thing about what happens when a player enters pro ball and has a big year like I did. And you'll find that happen to other players. As soon as a player has a big year, well, I don't care whether it's in Class D or... but it's got to be in pro ball.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it helps also when you got a good career nowadays in college baseball.
Right.
Or high school baseball. When you're a superstar, and I call it, when you've had that super year, you just get so much confidence knowing that you can play or hit. I thought I could hit anybody. In fact, I wrote the Detroit Tigers, I could help them right then. you get that ego thing, and that is so important in a baseball player's career, because every sport has a tendency to try to break you down.
Mm-hmm.
Tennis, for instance, you play out of high school, and all of a sudden you meet a couple of pros, and they try to beat you. And some of them, if you let them, they'll keep beating you down where they'll force you to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball's the same way. Minor leaguers, we get high school stars, college stars, and the first year they might have trouble because they're playing against other, college stars and high school stars. So if you don't have the right temperament and are not successful the first year, oftentimes you are not able to bounce back for some reason. The mental part of our business is so, so important.
Yes.
So, there you are.
Well, you certainly impressed the Tigers because you were in Detroit by the end of the next year.
Yes, I had a good year at Beaumont, too. The Beaumont, Texas was a tough, it was a tough league. At that time, they used to send more players to the big leagues than the AAA clubs did.
Yeah.
The AAA clubs were all, privately owned.
There were guys going the other way, AAA.
The league and the Southern Association, they had working agreements with the major league clubs. So they used to send all their younger players to places like the Texas League or Southern League. Like, for instance, we had Dick Wakefield on our club, Hoot Evers, Ann Spoor, those fellas and the guys that went through there, like Hank Greenberg, they never went to AAA. Pat Mullen, Bobby Sikorski, those guys all went right from Beaumont to the Major League.
Mm-hmm.
So that was their top club, in a sense. Now, AAA was a club with, it was good baseball. But they had older players playing. That's been in the minor league maybe 10 years. Maybe couldn't run fast enough or do something that, or just maybe never had an opportunity to make a major league team. And some of them, of course, had been in the majors for a few years and were in AAA. So AAA was tough, but the AA clubs were the ones that were really with the better young prospects, and they were the ones ending up in AAA and in major leagues in those days.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you joined them, you were there to stay other than the Navy. Did you enlist or were you drafted?
Pardon?
When you went in the Navy, did you enlist or were you drafted?
Oh, I enlisted. I would have been drafted. I was 19 years old. I was going to turn 20, and of course, Pearl Harbor was 41 of December. I got through with 42, and I enlisted shortly after the season was over. I enlisted in the Navy. I tried to get in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking about as a pilot. But there were so many candidates ahead of me that were, college graduates, and of course that's where most of the pilots had some kind of a college education.
Right.
At least they had first crack at it. Anyway, I got in the Navy and stayed there. I ended up in the Air Force as a flight engineer.
Did you play ball while you were in the service?
Pardon?
Did you play ball in the service?
I played very little baseball.
Okay, so you were...
That's where I came up with problems. When I came out, I had a sore arm, sore back. I never really was as good a player, I don't think, when I came back out.
Okay.
My arm wasn't as strong, and my back just gave me just a lot of trouble through the years.
You can look at the record and see where you rarely played a full schedule. You were always missing 3 weeks here and there, things like that.
I had a couple of years that I had a legitimate injury, like in 1950, I had 17 stitches, you know, the spike wound. And a couple other times I dove for baseballs and got injured. But you're right. There was a period there where I was getting these nagging injuries, probably caused by back problems.
Mm-hmm. The back is a bad thing to have go wrong.
Anyway, I didn't have as much power when I came back out.
But you produced, gee whiz, you produced real well. Right? You spent the year in Dallas in what, 47?
Contact hitter. In fact, I struck out very seldom, and I was leading off, you know, most of my time in the big league. I was a leadoff hitter. So my job was to get on base. I just take two strikes unless somebody was in scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
So base on balls, they used to tell us years ago, just get a base hit, and that's so true.
Still is. 1950, you teamed with Jerry Pretty to, at that time, take part in more double plays than any other infield combination ever had. Was you and Pretty seemed to fit pretty well together. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, we had a good infield then. George Kell was a fine player at third base. Well, of course, he was a Hall of Famer.
Sure.
And a good aggressive player and a good contact hitter. When I first went to the big league, we had Charlie Gehringer, but Charlie was an outstanding. Well, he was my hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I was young. That's before I went into service and didn't play with him that much. But when Pretty came over in 1950, here's a guy that, you know, went through the minor league career with Phil Rizzuto.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a fine defensive player, knew how to play his position, and helped me a lot as far as, when you give Jerry Pretty the ball, he got rid of it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing he'd tell me, he said, as soon as you catch the ball, just give it to me. You know, where it'd lead you. A lot of guys... A lot of guys, even today, wait till the player gets to the bag, and it just takes time. In other
right.
words, as soon as you're giving it, your opposing combination the ball, he's going to be able to get rid of it that much quicker, even though he may be 5-6 steps away from second base.
Yeah, it's all a matter of split seconds. And
it takes an awful lot of practice. And we were helped by... the fact that, he was an experienced player, and I was at that time an experienced player.
Right. Well, you played in Detroit. You played very well for Detroit. You hit well. You fielded well. But in 52, they traded you to Boston. How did you feel about that?
Well, we were all, there was, see, when we finished strong in 50, we probably should have won the pennant in 1950. We had one major injury. Virgil Trux was out for about a month or 6 weeks because he injured his arm in a train accident. Stuck his elbow through a plane train window.
Oh.
But anyhow, then in 51, we had a fairly strong year, but kind of a disappointing season for us because we thought we were going to win in 50, and then 51 we didn't, and then in 52 we got off to a slow start, and they traded away their ball club, in my opinion, because they traded George Kell for one.
Right.
and then Hoot Evers for another, and Dizzy Trout for another. And they got some favorites at Boston, like Johnny Pesky, but Pesky was an older player, and he wasn't going to play much anymore. And Fred Hatfield. Fred Hatfield was, you know, a pretty good major league player. And they got Walt Dropo, which was the big guy they wanted, you know, Detroit wanted. And there were two other players, Bill White and Don Lenhart. Anyhow, but I think the fact that Detroit was such a, I mean, George Kell was such a productive player that Boston might have got the best of that deal.
Well, I'm sure there's no question they did. At least looking back at the time, maybe it was a little more difficult to see. Then, well, after that, is this when your back really started acting up? Because you were never the player.
Well, I ended up with back trouble in Boston. The weather in Boston was is conducive to back problems. You'll notice some of those players, they come up with back problems in the Boston area. Wade Boggs is, you know, he's a super talent. So is that Yastrzemski, the other Polak. Yastrzemski, he was a super talent. But he had some years there where he was, and you know, there's one or two subpar starts because it's so cold in Boston in April and May. That it's oftentimes you get some nagging back, you know, nagging injuries. And I really admire the guys that have played a long time in the Boston ball club and never got hurt, because to me it's a very tough place to play.
My wife is from just outside of Boston. We go up there periodically, and I guess that's a great place to live if you want to live there, but I sure couldn't do it. Who, in your career, who was the best player or best hitter you saw?
Oh, Dead Williams, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's the best hitter I ever saw.
He was amazing.
Some great players, including, you know, Willie Mays, and DiMaggio was a super talent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, DiMaggio, Mays, I'll tell you the guy I really like, Clemente, because I saw him when I managed in Puerto Rico. He's one of the superstars of all time.
Yes, indeed.
I'd say Mays, Clemente, and Williams, DiMaggio. Of course, there were so many. There's so many that are super. Bob Feller, who threw nothing but aspartame or something. So, and there was just, there's so many that, is, you know, I'm going to miss out. But those are the four guys that I really felt were something special.
Was Feller the best pitcher you saw?
Pardon?
Feller was the best pitcher you saw?
Oh, yeah, Feller, best arm, best velocity.
Yeah. What about Hal Newhouser, your teammate?
Well, Hal Newhouser had that good curveball, and he had better than average fastball, and he came up with an excellent change. The guy I was impressed with was the guy from the Dodgers. He just threw that fastball and used to jump. Left-hander, Koufax.
Koufax, yeah.
Koufax had better than average stuff, you know, just super stuff.
Yeah, he was.
The year there was unhittable. Marichal, you know, those are special people, and we've got them today.
Yeah.
You got your Clemens, and you got your players. That's the greatest thing about every sport, not only baseball, but you're always coming up with these superstars that, you know, that draw the fan, whether it's Bo Jackson or whether it's you know, whoever our superstars are today, just like basketball, Michael Jordan's, and those fellows draw those people attract the fans.
Have you seen this boy with LSU, Shaquille O'Neal?
Pardon?
Have you seen this fellow that plays for LSU, Shaquille O'Neal?
I've seen him on TV.
Boy, he is phenomenal.
That's what they say.
Gee whiz. I'm in Kentucky, so this is Southeast Conference territory, and
right.
Gee, he is just amazing. I don't know if he's as good as Michael Jordan, but I bet he's going to be very close to it in a few years.
Yeah, you get fellas like that, they're superstars, no doubt about it.
Yes, and that's what all sports need, as you say. They have them, they need them. Is there one game in your career that stands out, either from your point of view or from your team's point of view or something?
Well, there's been so many, 42, my first day in the big leagues, just the fact that I was playing alongside of Charlie Gehringer, who was my, boyhood hero.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact I got 3 hits that day was a big day.
Oh, boy.
But then I had 7 hits in a doubleheader in New York. 1 Grand Slam home run. So, we all have certain things. We're all egotists in a way. So some of the best days I've had was the most hits I had.
Yeah, well, you've got to be an egotist to play the game, to perform in anything, acting or sports or anything.
Yeah, you've got to be an egotist.
Yeah.
You have to like yourself and know that you can play.
Right. The ones, the questioners, the thinkers, the doubters, I don't think they ever make it.
That's about right.
Did you save souvenirs along the way?
Very few.
Not a collector.
I thought I had a St. Louis Browns uniform. In fact, I did have one, but when you move around in transit and somehow it gets misplaced.
Boy, I guess Browns.
I haven't saved any uniforms. I haven't saved any. I used to have a couple of gloves and I gave them away. So I have very few souvenirs. I used to have a Babe Ruth baseball signature that was, I got when I was about 12 years old, but put that in the ball game a couple of weeks later. So, I'm not much for souvenirs, truthfully.
Yeah, a lot of guys, there seems to be two different thoughts. Some guys say they saved everything they touched, and others say that, no, they just weren't collectors. It's, I guess it's how you're brought up.
It's the way you feel. It's